Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion.
Today, I'm talking to Alice Power. Alice, could you tell us about yourself, and not just about what you do, but how you see yourself as an artist?
Yeah, okay, so I kind of see being an artist as a bit like living on your own wee island, and you can fill that space with just what you want. So I like to listen to loud music, and not all the time though.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, my own creative space, my own imagination. I see my room as my own wee island, and mm-hmm. I get to shut the door and everyone else is away.
And do you pick the type of music depending on what you're working on, or
sometimes it's the other way?
Oh really?
So sometimes the music just drives the emotion in the painting, which is it's a fun way to work, but not obviously if you're doing a commission or anything like that.
and how did you first come into painting? When did it sort of take hold of you? What was the motivation for that?
Well, it kind of crept up on me, actually. I was a silversmith for a few years, and then I had my wee boy Fred, who's now 13, his sister mm-hmm. Xanthi is 19. So while I trained before Fred, when Xanthi was young, and after a couple of years of babydom and just focusing on him, I went to get back into it and realised that when it was once $5 to make a ring, it jumped up to $30 just for the price of silver. So I had to have a big rethink. Mm. And so it kind of made me a wee bit wobbly, like, oh my God, what am I going to do? This is what I've been wanting forever. And I kind of realised that I was still into making jewellery. I still really enjoyed it. So I went to component making jewellery, which is using either found objects or little filigrees mm-hmm. and gemstones and just messing around and making the best things. And that took off really well, so that was really good. Again, like ebbs and flows, and so that was really good. Did a few more ranges of jewellery, and then I realised that it was just a wee bit overwhelming and I needed a way to relax. So I took up painting, and then suddenly when I put a few images out and people really loved them, I started selling paintings, and suddenly it wasn't about the jewellery anymore and painting took over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was your jewellery making similar to your painting style? As in subject matter of things, or was it?
There is a little bit of crossover. I'm drawn to pre-Raphaelite kind of that romantic and dark kind of imagery. So a lot of my jewellery was like that. I did a range with war ribbons, and I made that kind of link with suffragettes and the romantic kind of side, not of war, but of the actual substance and the materials I was using. Yeah.
You struck me as being incredibly prolific, and is making art like a daily discipline for you?
It is actually. I with commissions, I set myself deadlines, a day to mock up the idea. If it's not a portrait, a day of working through the tones, a day of colour, and then the final touches. So that's kind of my process when I know what the image is going to be. So it is a disciplined approach, but it definitely becomes a compulsion as well.
Yeah.
If everything is flowing perfectly, then it becomes like, sorry kids, it's soup for dinner night, you know, and they're okay with that. And it's just because I have to finish. Some weeks it's painting every day, including Saturday. So compulsion and passion.
Right.
I've one painting I've finished to a saleable standard, but to me, I know that I can always make it better. So that's just been sitting there waiting.
And I suppose that having that structured approach makes it easier to understand how long a commission is going to take as well, I suppose.
I definitely have. If it's a straight portrait, then I know how long it will take. Yeah, it's quite easy to judge, especially if it's not a high intensity colour portrait. Yeah.
What happens to you if you don't paint?
What happens? I go into kind of just lying on the couch mode, knowing that I should be doing something and not really achieving much. Yeah. A lot of chess, a lot of staring at what I've already done, going, oh my god, I could have done that better. And then I'll go and annoy the kids until they give me something to do.
The amount of work you produce, where do all the ideas come from? Like,
So that's actually quite varied. Like with a straight portrait, I've got a straight portrait commission, I need to do. But if it's my own work, usually emotions, I strive to evoke an emotion in all of my work actually, whether it's a landscape or a figure. My son is quite a good resource for interesting ideas. When he was little, he asked, how do fish huck? And it struck me as just like, oh gosh, I've got to paint that, that is just so sweet. And so I did, and I'm not sure who bought it, as it was sold at a gallery, but I hope they saw the sweet naivety in it.
Yeah. And how do you know whether an idea is worth taking right the way through to the canvas?
That usually isn't a problem for me. So, commissions are driven obviously through the client's ideas, but occasionally there's one that's a two-person experience. At the moment, I've got a series of four that I'm doing, and it's been a really interesting process. As it's kind of like a to and fro, like yes to this and change that. So that's been fun. So his ideas are driving what's happening, but I'm the paint monkey doing it.
And so what proportion of your stuff do you end up doing as commissions as opposed to like your own self-initiated work?
Well, to start with, it was just all me for about a year, just exploring. I did a whole year of just getting back into colour theory. I did 5 years at art school and motherhood just kind of swept that all the way. And so just relearning what I already knew, reconnecting those synapses was really important. So I spent a whole year just doing colour theory again and remembering what bounces off what and how to make colours sing and stuff like that.
And you did a fine art degree, did you?
Yeah, I did a Bachelor of Fine Arts and half of a craft design degree. Well, it was 6 months from the end and realised that I would come out essentially a carpenter, and although I should have continued that at the time, freaked me out. And
did you do that before the fine art degree?
Yeah. So I got 2.5 years into that, and then took a year break on the artist's wage, and then went back to finish.
I did a similar thing. I started studying 3D design, and then realised it wasn't for me, and transferred to fine art.
Oh, nice.
And then worked in design for God knows how long.
Changed back again.
Yeah.
Almost.
Circumstance makes it so. I noticed you use round canvases a lot.
Yes. Okay, so that's a funny thing. I went to a Steiner school.
Right.
Do you know much about that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, a wee bit. So when you're there, you're taught there's no straight lines in nature.
Right.
And so I think that's Antoni Gaudí, the architect, who's the quote?
I think that's a tribute to him.
So round canvases allow for a certain kind of feeling that you're seeing just a glimpse of a bigger picture, or there's more to the world than just what you're seeing in that canvas. And there's no sides to say you're boxed in or you know, that idea is finished. And sometimes tilting a circular canvas can lead to an even better viewpoint. So I like that it's not static. Yeah.
I like the fact that there is a deep philosophy behind it rather than I want to use brown canvases, like some people do.
I think I know a few people have kind of done the same thing, and I'm like, no, you're not doing it right. But that's my own viewpoint. Yeah. Like there should be empty space around your subject.
Yeah,
it
definitely
doesn't always have to be filled in.
Totally. Yeah. And how do you walk the line? But your work connects quite deeply with audiences. How do you walk the line between, like in your own self-initiated work, going, this one is deeply personal for me, against is this commercially viable? Like, how do you walk that line, or do you just go?
I don't. One of my most favourite tutors, Rudolf Belay, told me two things, and one of them in my first year at Design and Arts, and they just stuck. And the first one is you are you. You can only express who you are. And it's not profound, but it kind of is at the same time that, I can only talk about myself. I can only view and paint from my perspective. So, it really struck that, yes, just do you. And the second was one that he said was just create and then create more. And so I think that stands to me as well, that so that one might not have been as good as you thought, but the next one will be, so just keep going.
That's what you only really learn by doing as well. And I suppose that approach, it works really well in as much as you're creating work that you feel an affinity and an integrity with.
Sometimes I don't want to let them go. Over the years I've had a wee collection, and then just earlier this year I actually said, well, they're my babies, but they need to be seen. And so I put them in a side gallery, and they sold, and that was very heartwarming because they were precious. And then I had instant regret, but I decided I could always paint again.
It's a really lovely feeling to know that, like, I personally find it when you sell something that you've had such a connection with making, and somebody else loves it enough to give you money for it.
I'm always chuffed, and kind of secretly, I guess I've always had that imposter syndrome, like, I know I love it, but will anyone else? And when they do, it's always like, yay, but maybe I'm not good enough, maybe the next one will be even better.
I view imposter syndrome as the shadow of integrity. It's like the fact that you want to be doing the right thing so much. There is always that self-judgment there. I think it's quite healthy to have imposter syndrome as an artist, personally. And I worked with Ralph Steadman for a while, the illustrator who works with Hunter S. Thompson. And he once told me that a piece of art isn't a piece of art until it's signed. And then he went, no, that's not true, actually. It's not a piece of art until it's sold. Which is a really capitalistic view of it, but there is more to it than that, I think.
I see that too. I mean, I've had commissions from Germany and Austria and stuff, and they're always quite different. Like, they'll pick up something in my painting that I haven't seen before, and I did quite a dark, somber series of kind of wee people escaping from an ooze, and they loved the skeletons that were dancing. So they saw it completely differently. So this one couple bought one painting, and then several years later they decided they needed a bigger version of it. So that was really nice.
And how did people from Austria, like, find you in little old New Zealand?
Well, the funniest thing was that woman, part of the couple, had bought jewellery from me in the markets pre-quakes, and she'd been searching for me for years, and then she remembered my name was Alice, and then she googled Alice Artist Christchurch, and it came up. Randomly came up, and then she was searching my page and realised that there wasn't any jewellery anymore, and went, but I like what's going on now too. So
that's
amazing. That was really cool.
And you have you have quite good relationships, or you seem to have quite good relationships with galleries around the place. How did you end up building that relationship and protecting yourself?
Yeah, well, I'm not very good at that. I've only been part of group shows,
right.
To date, anyway. Mm-hmm. I'm taking kind of a break from exhibiting this year because I think I need to get a better body of work mm-hmm. to get into a dealer gallery. And I'm just trying to decide which one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a quite variation of personalities plus space, and I want to make sure I make the right decision.
Yeah, so, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. But how do you end up, do you approach them or?
Yeah. Okay. I approached Linwood East at first and one of their open calls, and she said, I can't believe you haven't exhibited before. And then I realised, oh no, I actually have exhibited before, sorry, I didn't read the brief, right? But she was forgiving of that and said, look, those other shows that you were in weren't as in public view as,
right.
Yeah, as people.
And have you ever thought of exploring other spaces other than the traditional galleries and things?
Well, I was part of the Art in Isolation exhibition, which was on billboards and around,
right.
What are those? Like bus stops, you
yeah.
know, those moving image, I don't know what they're called, but
yeah
bus
shells,
posters,
yeah.
So every so often they flick through the images of, I think there was 16, but I could be wrong, artists
wow.
that got into that, and that was actually really fun because I get a Facebook message from a friend in Whanganui or something, I saw your work, and it was really cool, but because I was at the time, like, we were all in lockdown, so I didn't actually get to see it myself, but I've got pictures from
nice.
Other friends, yeah.
And what would you say would be the most sort of challenging part of living life as a painter and an artist?
It's managing your time for me,
mm-hmm.
and it's managing the emotional space to create art. Like, you don't wake up and go, I'm going to paint just like I did yesterday and the day before, but it leads into that kind of feeling. I feel really good when I'm painting, and it's kind of like yoga, you know, you don't wake up and go, I really want to do that, but you do it anyway and it feels really good. So managing the time and around my kids, even though they're older, they still need energy, and so sometimes they'll come in and just watch, but they do know if mum's got a paintbrush in her hand and she's got a glare in her eye, just don't go into the studio right now.
And what gets you through when things are hard, when you just really don't feel like it? Well,
I just do it anyway.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to do, but I do have a lot of, well, not a lot, but there's four or five canvases that just I pack up for half an hour every six months, and that's my anger management canvas, that occasionally there's something really good that happens, or occasionally not. Actually, the last one I did was sold to a therapist to put her in her office, so that was that was fun.
So you have more than one canvas on go at a time, do you?
Oh, yeah. So, with that question, I do. One of my dear mentor friend tutors back at art school, Victoria Edwards, she said to me, always start a series with your images planned and work on them all at once. You'll get consistency, you'll get the same tone and depth, and if one or two slip off the workbench, you've already got a body of work on the go. So that became really, really important to me as well. Both her and Bolly had a great impact on me.
Rudolf Bolly.
Their message combined was create for you and to keep at it, and I'm just really coming into living that now.
So the idea being you have a body of work you're working on all at once because it will have a consistency to it that you can then...
Cool. And so... it makes it easier for you. You don't have to mix those certain colours every time. It makes sense to me anyway. Maybe not to everyone, but to start off all as one, and then as you go, things become more clearer. And especially if it's just from your own ideas melding on the canvas.
And also, I suppose if you feel that you're trying too hard on one particular piece, you can step away and still be practicing. And not just go, I've got that writer's block or the artist's block, and just.
It definitely means that sometimes this room is maybe 7 canvases all around the place and there is no room for anything else. But it works really well for me. Yeah,
good. And obviously you're in Christchurch and there are a number of people here. Do you feel part of any sort of creative community at all?
Not really, to be honest. Like, I know there are arts trails and communities and things, but my work's quite insular, I guess.
Yeah.
I do have artistic friends and artist friends, but they're mostly from art school or only just recently kind of branching out to reach more painters in Christchurch.
Yeah, good.
But it's kind of just on my own.
Because I always found like that at university, being surrounded by other people who are also practicing is really quite helpful, I think.
Yeah.
So it's strange, but it's not that evident. And then you're not aware of anything that the Arts Council are doing to try and connect people or anything like that?
Not really, to be honest. Like, maybe it's for my lack of searching at the moment, but I haven't been into a gallery and seen a brochure or anything like that. Yeah.
So you're not aware of anything that they can offer or
stuff like
that. There you go.
Yeah.
If there was a piece of wisdom from a mentor or a friend, even a stranger that you've received, that really struck with you in the past, what would that be?
I did actually. So back to my friend Rudolph. We became friends over the years. So just from being tutor student, he was just really easy to talk to, and really good critiques as well.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they were a little bit like, oh no, I really messed up there, but at the end, they made my work better, and it happened really fast. So those critiques in the early days were really, really important. And so he just died at the start of this year.
Oh.
But last year I went to visit him at his house in his studio to just chat and catch up like old friends. And I was asking him, you know, along the lines of, am I doing the right thing? Sticking to art, hopefully getting a stable job and, you know, like starting again, new career and things. And he said, we can't all go that road. And why would we want to?
Yeah.
And he said, you're a born artist and there's nothing better than that. And that just gave me the kind of boost that I needed to go, no, don't give up. Keep going.
Yeah. So if you've got the calling, you really just got to keep.
Yeah, you just got to keep at it.
I think you're quite lucky to have a mentor like that. Somebody.
I was. Yeah. My parents are both, well, they were when I was younger. They always had artsy people over. My dad was the editor of a Christchurch arts magazine, Presto. So often I'd come back from high school and there'd be some young artist in our kitchen being interviewed just like this.
Oh, right.
So it was probably horrible for them, for me to be in the corner going, what are you talking about? Hi. And there was no second takes or anything like that. So, but it was great. There were heaps of artists through our house all the time.
That's awesome. What a wonderful foundation. So for someone sort of dreaming of becoming an artist, what advice would you give them, do you think?
Well, to be honest, it's hard, but if you love it, just keep going.
And
put in the time, because you can't improve if you're only dabbling once a week, but you will improve really fast if you if you put in the time. Even now, I know where my weak points are, and so I'm looking at actually studying painting, because I didn't do painting. I did sculpture and kinetic sculpture and photography were my majors, so not even painting. So I've taught myself how to paint, and I need to do a bit more. Yeah,
that's interesting. And I trained as a sculptor as well.
Oh, right.
and I ended up painting for years. And I'm wondering if there's, if you have any take on what it's like to not have, to have the creative training, but not the formal training in a material or a medium, and how it gives you a different perspective.
Oh, most likely it does. I can't say yet, but I want to. I want to get some formal training. I'm quite self-disciplined, so I can do that over the internet, and I found a course that I'm dying to do. Really large scale paintings. At the moment, not many of mine are over 100 centimetres, but I want to get up to 2 metre kind of size, which will mean rearranging my room again.
And what are you hoping that that painting big will give you, do you think?
Well, the styles that I'm drawn to are almost like fantastical realist, but dark. And so I think just being able to have more space in the painting. I have no idea how I'm going to get a really round substrate for a canvas, but I'll figure it out.
Maybe that's where the sculpture background
is. Maybe, yeah. Curving wood, I'm thinking curving wood might be the easiest way. Yeah,
that's interesting. There's a whole challenge there.
Yeah. Why not? Challenge yourself every day.
And where can people find your work?
Well, I haven't got a website yet, but Crooked Little Alice on Facebook and Crooked Instagram, Alice, right. And lots of people find me there all the time, so I'm sure you can find me if you want to. As I said, I'm taking this year off exhibiting and hoping to do this painting course on Mastering Light. Yeah.
Like the old masters and stuff like this.
Yeah.
That'd be really interesting.
Yeah, I think it would lend itself to my
good luck style. With that.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I would love to know more about the council's, the art council stuff, so maybe if there's links to that.
Yeah, so it's definitely worth checking out Creative New Zealand stuff.
Yeah.
They offer, several times a year, they offer grants for picking up new skills, so they can go up to, and I don't have the information in front of me, so apologies if I get any of this wrong, up to about $5,000 to undergo training that will improve your practice.
Right.
And
sounds like me. I would love
really,
that.
Really good. Yeah. It's really good, and it's worth persevering and applying, and even if you don't get it this time, then applying again and learning from it. But the Arts Council, or Creative New Zealand, they do, their advice lines and their help is phenomenal. I've been so utterly impressed with how free they are with the information of how to apply and what you need, what makes a good application. If they're on the selection body, they will tell you that they're on the selection body so that they can't tell you certain things, because they don't want to give you anybody an unfair advantage over anybody else.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, it's really good. So they do that. But then they also do another grant that I'm aware of, particularly for artists, which is, it's a practice art. It's like for you to be able to work. So that's to pay for your rent and your food and stuff like this, and I think that's about 50 to, I'm not sure whether it's $100,000 or not, but it's a substantial amount of money to give artists the space to work and develop their skills without the pressure of having to go out and get a job at a coffee shop or a bakery and stuff, so just to focus on what they do. But then there's multitude of other grants and stuff, so definitely check out the Creative New Zealand website. I was surprised when I found it, and I'm surprised that it's not more spoken about. It seems to be like a secret that people discover and hold to themselves, and I think we need to change that.
Yeah, definitely.
Like we are a community, and it should be about community over competition,
yeah,
and helping each other out. That's the whole reason why this was started, is like I wanted to hear stories from other artists,
yeah,
and share the wisdom and learn things myself.
Yeah.
I think it's really important.
Yeah.
I think it's really important. Like, we are the people that can really change society.
Yeah.
In a time where everything feels really dark.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, that's definitely it.
But even looking at, like, I find some of your work looks at some of the darkness, and I think that's really important as well.
Mm.
There's a real Jungian aspect to that,
mm,
which, yeah, is which is important. Alice, thank you very much.
No worries.
Wonderful,
that was
thank
just
you.
A way. Thank you.
Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearth Tale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website, hearthtales.com. And you can listen to this episode of Hearth Tales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight. Until next time, fare thee well, friends. Fare thee well.